At Parker, our purpose is simple. We want to make the world a better place. By working more efficiently, by using more sustainable practices, by developing better technologies, we keep moving forward. With each new idea, innovation, and partnership, we're one step closer to fulfilling our purpose every single day. To find out more, visit parker.com/purpose. Parker, engineering your success.
Save big money and transform your home with new appliances now at Menards. We offer the lowest prices and the largest in-stock appliance selection ready to take home today. Check out top appliance brands, including KitchenAid, Maytag, Whirlpool, Amana, and Criterion. Upgrade your home and save big money on new appliances at Menards. Shop our entire selection of appliance options online today at Menards.com.
Save big money at Menards.
And wherever you are, go ahead and share tonight's episode with someone, with a friend. And if you're driving in your car, let someone know where they can hear TMG.
It's time to get on board. TMG is taking off.
Hi, everybody. Welcome to TMG. I'm your host, Travis Patton Sr. I enjoy discovering and sharing real-life moments of inspiration from everyday people. And this show is about finding moments of inspiration for our everyday lives. And look, and if you're going to tell me something, then tell me something good.
Hi, everybody, and welcome to a brand new episode of TMG. I'm your host, Travis Patton Sr. Guys, look, do me a favor real quick. Don't forget to share and like our YouTube page. That's Tell Me Something Good with a capital T. And as always, I want to give a huge shout out to my biggest supporter, my biggest fan, my lovely wife, Nicole. Hey, girl, how you doing? I know you're watching. I know you're listening. Man, tonight's episode is going to be amazing. I got so excited when I was preparing for this episode. I almost started to interview myself. I did. I promise you, man. I started to interview myself because I learned so much. Each episode just gets better and better. And guys, I learned so much in this episode. And I got some really special guests tonight, guys. That's going to blow you away. I'm not going to delay it, but thank you, everybody, for joining. Thank you, everybody, for coming on in. If it's Thursday, guess what? PMG is streaming. I'm so glad you're here. Guys, a little bit. Everybody knows that this show is all about finding moments of inspiration in lives. So if you have an inspiring story that you would like to share and maybe come on a show, guys, do me a favor. Drop us an email at TELLMeSomething21@gmail.com. That's right, TELLMeSomething21@gmail.com. And say, well, Travis, listen, man, I know someone that has a great story. They would love to come on your show. Man, but I don't want to come on your show. I'm a little camera shy. That's okay. Send us their email anyhow at TELLMeSomething21@gmail.com. And you can even remain anonymous if you'd like. See, there you go. You don't even have to come on camera. But I'm so glad that everyone is here. Guys, everyone knows that this show has a few affiliate sponsors. So what I'm going to do now is pay that sponsor information. Once I'm done, we're going to come back. We're going to dive into this show because this is going to be good. Don't go away. Don't go nowhere. We'll be right back.
Walmart is a proud associate sponsor of TMG Tell Me Something Good podcast. Please use the special link, bit.ly/ Tell Me Something Good, and visit our sponsor. Remember, I may earn a commission when you buy through this link. Fanatics is the place to go for all of your officially licensed sports gear from your favorite sports and sports teams. Use the special link bit.ly/tellmesomething21 and pay a visit to our sponsor today. Remember, I may earn a commission when you buy through this link.
Guys, there it is. Please use any one of the special links that's in the chat, guys. Visit our sponsors. I'm not sure you know this or not, but spring football is here. Then fall football will be here before you know it. Get your favorite jerseys by visit one of our sponsors. Guys, tonight's episode is going to be simply amazing. I do want to say this in case you weren't aware of it, guys. The month of April is World Autism Awareness Month. And guys, if you did not know that, 1 in 36 children has been identified with autism in the U.S., according to the CDC. Now, that's around 1% of the world's population has us on an autism spectrum disorder. Now, that's more than 75 million people, according to research conducted by the CDC. So 1 in every 100 children are diagnosed with autism spectrum disorder. Now listen, to do our part, we can spread the word of awareness, inclusion, and equity by discovering ways to help in our local areas. Guys, if you didn't get a chance to catch tonight's topic, tonight's episode, guys, it's called Finish the Course. Yeah, I know that could go so many directions, but we're going to stay on course so we can finish the course. Guys, as you know, we're talking about World Autism Awareness Month here in the month of April. Let me say this. If you were to ask any parent, ask most parents, if they feel their child is special or if they think something is special about their child, they will answer yes. I don't know a parent that won't say, yeah, my child is special, girl. Yes, my child can count by twos. Whatever it is, if you ask any parent, they will right away tell you that their child is special. They will answer yes. And whether they are gifted athletically, academically, or artistically, or in some cases, they may be gifted in many areas. But for the most part, parents believe there is something exceptional about their children. And this doesn't change if the child has a disability or a neurodiverse student on the autism spectrum like we will discuss today. But with low retention rates, now we're talking about going to school, but with low retention rates of students on the spectrum in colleges, it's becoming increasingly difficult to see these bright students finish their course. Guys, our guest tonight will talk about why it is important to finish and to cross the hurdles students face and what we can do to help support our students. Listen, do me a favor. I want you to give a huge TMG welcome to our returning guest with me tonight, guys, on the show, Loretta Smith, her son, Dr. Kelvin Smith, and Dr. Diane Hudson. Guys, how y'all doing today? So glad you are here. Don't tell me I got you guys all on mute. Dr. Hudson, there you go. Say something to me, Dr. Hudson.
Thank you so much, Travis. I'm so excited to be here again with
not as excited as I am, Dr. Hudson. Not as excited as I am. You guys, the last time you guys were here, you rocked it. I didn't tell you this, guys, but the last time you were here, your episode was one of the highest downloaded episodes I have.
Oh, great.
Wow. Yeah,
it was one of the highest download episodes. People really liked what you had to say. They really liked your input. They really liked the dynamics of everybody. So I say, yeah, it's a no-brainer to get you guys to come back this year because what you were saying, what you shared, resonated with so many people. I'm not talking about in the United States. I'm talking about around the world.
Wow.
That's amazing.
So your message really got out there. And it rang bells with people. Dr. Kelvin over there chilling. Look at him. Dr. Kelvin's there chilling. Yeah, what you had to listen, Dr. Kelvin. You. I'm listen, guys. I'm going to get started. I promise you. Dr. Kelvin said something the very first time I had he and his mom on the show, and I will never forget what you said to me. What you said, Dr. Kelvin. You said being on the spectrum is your superpower. I am never forgetting that. So when I thought about a hero with super abilities, I said, yeah, this guy is incredible. So it stuck with me, Dr. Kelvin. It's never going away, man. It's in my brain.
I'm glad.
but I can't believe that it's been a full year. We were talking about this before the show. I can't believe it's been a year already since that show. So thank you, everybody, for joining in. I got to get started with this, guys. I gave some information, some numbers out there earlier. And I know we're talking about retention and going to school and how people on the spectrum, those individuals on the spectrum, what's it like to be in college? Dr. Kelvin, you finished college. You graduated from college. And as we will find out, guys, that alone is an incredible feat within itself, as we provide some additional information. So before we take a look, I do want to say this, before we take a look at academic hurdles, though, at any academic hurdles, as Larissa says, neurodiverse students. All right, before we take a look at academic hurdles, we also must look at some aspects of everyday life hurdles, because those everyday life hurdles can get to become in the way. And those everyday things, getting up, getting started, preparing yourself mentally, physically, those hurdles can also come into play when it comes to school retention, when it comes to school completing and finishing the course. Those things absolutely can come into play. So we got to look at some of those everyday hurdles of life as neurodiverse students or an adult with what challenges they might face. So what would each of you say are some of these challenges? And I'm going to start with you, Dr. Kelvin, because you finished your course. You went to school. You had to do all that stuff that we're talking about. So what were some of the everyday challenges, my friend, you had to deal with?
Absolutely. So I just wanted to say, hey, Travis, and hey, everyone. thanks all for providing this platform today for me to highlight the strengths and needs for autistic individuals such as myself during autism month. So as I look over my life as an adult on the autism spectrum, I actually awake every day, even to this day, on E. And what I mean by E is like on empty socially. I know that I have to deal with social interactions every day. I have to read social cues. All of that is difficult. That drains me every day. So I have to recharge daily in that specific area. I spent my life actually like a deer in headlights, wondering like what question they're going to ask me, what are they looking from me, what are they expecting out of me, and that kind of heightens my anxiety, and I actually have to learn how to self-regulate myself, minimize meltdowns and shutdowns in my brain, and I'm around neurotypicals daily during my job and in my daily life, who have no clue how I view life. People say that we're isolated, and the truth is that we don't technically isolate ourselves. Y'all kind of isolate us. And it's not y'all personally, it's just but neurotypicals kind of, do have that because our way of thinking is completely different. I actually, back in middle school, I did try to mask myself to try to fit in with them, try to be buddy buddy with them, but I actually was teased and isolated by doing so. So I just decided to just be my authentic side. I decided just no, it's not worth masking. I just want to be my authentic self. The way that we carry ourselves for those people under the autism spectrum is looked down upon. Eye contact, voice, the way we stem, like we have stemming. It seems awkward to you. And the way that we think and see ourselves is considered weird and kind of wrong. But the truth is that we're just different from y'all, and we're just logical thinkers. I'm not wired to be fake. I'm not wired to be deceptive, manipulative, being a liar, have a facade, this mask or something. But unfortunately, the world is full of people like that, and I just don't fit. Neurotypicals are wired to be focused on people and social interactions and feel like how they viewed by others. But I'm wired to focus on facts, knowledge, information, details. I've reached a point in my life, thanks to my mother next to me, where I have the skills to be able to cope and function in society and advocate for myself and maneuver where I must. But every day that I'm done with what I need to do, I can't wait to get back to my bubble. I need to go back. I have my safe haven in my room where I feel safe and happy. But I am blessed enough to be able to be even outside, be surrounded by my mom, family members, coworkers, and friends who do love me and allow me to be as authentic around them. And as people on the autism spectrum, we have our own strengths and challenges. We're very intelligent. We have exceptional talents, as Travis said earlier, but they need to be nurtured by our parents. And we have excellent memory skills, and we're definitely good problem solvers. Other things that we're really good at is, you know, we're loyal to y'all. We are highly dependable. We respect everybody. We're, you know, just, you know, we want to, you know, do well by you. And there's, you know, we're not going to lie to you. We're not going to, we're going to get the job done. We get our deadlines on time. That's one of the big things about me. Like, I've never been like,
I need some help with that part right there, Dr. Cowboy.
but like everybody can depend on me to get a piece of job, like some work done. For a time frame, for a deadline. I've never missed a deadline because I just feel like it's like more of a, I take it more of a, what's the word? Like a respect thing. Like I respect your time and for me to respect that time, I give back to y'all with my work for you. So all these qualities and traits that we have, are positives. Now, of course, there's some challenges that, you know, with me initiating and organizing, carrying out tasks sometimes, seeing others' point of view, but seeing the big picture. But I always, my big thing, I ask for clarification, questions every time, and I ask for assistance when I need it. It may sound like a basic question for a neurotypical, but for someone like me that can't, that have a tough time seeing the big picture, I ask all these questions. So my mom asks me all the time on a scale of 1 to 10, every time I'm done with work or when I'm done with, you know, every day in a PhD, she asks me like on a scale of 1 to 10, how happy I am. And I'm usually around, fluctuate about 7 to 8. Sometimes it can be a little bit higher than that. Sometimes it can be a little lower than that. But she's just gauging my mental health. And that's a great thing. And she tells me daily to go be great and live my life unapologetically authentic, and that's just what I do.
Man, Dr. Kelvin, first of all, let me say this, Dr. Kelvin, kudos to you for everything. You are very articulate, Dr. Kelvin, extremely articulate. You are able to express your thoughts very clearly, very well. I've been on that for the time we've been talking. I'm gonna have to get with you on that time thing, Calvin. I'm gonna have to get you on that. I'm just kidding. But a lot of people do struggle with things as far as getting things done in a timely manner. I'm like you in a sense, Dr. Calvin. For some tasks where you give me things to do, I'm in a hurry about it. Some things I'm like, you know, I'll get to that in a minute. But there are some tasks I do. They ring very clear, and I have to throw my whole self behind it. If I'm volunteering to do something, they say, "Trash, we just need somebody to sweep." You know, I'm going to sweep. I'm like I'm sweeping the palace.
because I feel you should. I do. Don't laugh at me, Larita. I do because I think, you know, if you're gonna do something, you should do it with full passion. You should do it with your full heart behind it. So I certainly understand that. So there are everyday challenges that individuals or neurodiverse students, and we're specifically talking about neurodiverse students here, guys. There are everyday challenges that Dr. Kelvin mentioned that he had to deal with. One of the first things he said, there were social cues. Oh my gosh, he said, I had to learn how to deal with people. Yeah. I had to learn how to deal with people when they want to be bothered, when they didn't want to be bothered, when they want to be approached, when they didn't want to be approached, how to approach them, what to say. And you said something, Dr. Kelvin, I do this all the time. When I get around people, oh my gosh, I have to recharge. Are you kidding me? For the first year of my marriage, my wife, she thought I just didn't like to be around people. She's like, dude, what's up? I told her, and she finally realized my daughter and I, we're both introverts. We have to be around people, we'll be that way. But after that, oh my gosh, my batteries are drained. I mean, I need to go sit somewhere in a room by myself, listen to some music, or Dr. Kelvin, don't laugh at me. And I know I'm gonna play video games because, you know, I already do it. But I have to recharge my batteries. Like, literally, I feel like a battery has just been drained of energy, and I have to recharge. But so social cues, Dr. Hudson, for neurodiverse students or people on the spectrum, how big is that?
That is huge. And I think from my experience working with neurodivergent individuals, it's really a lot about how other people are willing to take time to understand someone else's different communication needs. You know, like Dr. Kelvin said, so many people that he interacts with don't really understand the way that his brain thinks. And that can be really challenging because you're trying to navigate this neurotypical world and it's not very accommodating. If you're not going to advocate for yourself, it's tricky. And the expectation in terms of social cues is that we all follow these neurotypical norms and rules and, you know, everybody knows them, but that's not true. And it's also kind of boring, I think, really, if we all did it the same way.
Be like everybody else, act like everybody else, talk like everybody else.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, yeah. So, I mean, those pieces are critical. And I think Dr. Kelvin is very unique in that he has had so many opportunities, and Larita, you're a big part of this, to really understand what his autism means to him, because everybody's is different, and to advocate when you need it. Like, even being able to say, hey, I'm done with work, I'm home, I'll see you tomorrow. I am going to my room and I will see you tomorrow. That is a form of self-advocacy that we don't even, a lot of times, grants to kids in school, whether they're in elementary school, high school, college.
Exactly.
Yeah.
I call it, I'm done peopling for today. I am done peopling. Larita, real quick for you. We did an episode that Kelvin mentioned something, you know, he said when he was in middle school, he used to try to mask it. You know, we did an episode behind the mask of, and we talked about that. So, and we talked about how you stood behind him and advocated that he pull that mask off and be Kelvin Smith, so everyone can realize, hey, this is him, and he's a fun guy once you get to know him. I mean, y'all just don't know. Kelvin, Dr. Kelvin is quiet when he's on the mic, but before the mic comes on, yeah. So he's a real fun guy to hang out with. See that sly smile? Say, you're not fooling me, Dr. Kelvin. See, he's laughing, man. So,
I did.
Was it difficult?
I did want to interject just a little something.
Go for it. Yeah. I need you, because how was it watching him navigate some of these day-to-day challenges?
Yeah, for that question, it was challenging. And a lot of times, I just want your audience to know, I just didn't wake up one day and all of a sudden I was the best advocate in the world. I had to learn as a parent.
That's good.
What is it that I needed to be for my son? And, what he needed more so than me being judgmental, he needed a parent to educate themselves, and he needed me to be a good listener as well. I think that was one of my biggest attributes, is to listen to his point of view, and not only that, to look at life through his prism. For me, continuing to learn how to support Kelvin as an adult, I've gone through all the stages with Kelvin, and it can be challenging to this day. We had a disagreement earlier today, and he had to kind of redirect me and, really help me to understand. And I'm glad he's at a stage in his life right now that he can do that. I take my hat off to all parents that are raising children on the autism spectrum. If I had a hat, I would tip it. This is a lifetime commitment. I have reached a stage where Kelvin advocates for himself, even when it comes to me. So he lets me know his needs and if I'm off track, Our relationship, it continues to grow in a positive direction because we separate. One of the biggest lessons I had to learn was separating lack of motivation versus capacity. And really, Kelvin taught me this. I got it wrong many, many times, mom and dad. And what I mean by that is, a lot of times, Kelvin, I'll ask him point blank. If I have a task for him to do, I'll just ask, is your response to me a lack of motivation, or is it a lack of capacity? And he'll let me know right out what it is. A lot of times it's simply that he doesn't want to do it. He hasn't prioritized it. And then there are some times where there are some nuances involved where he really does not have the capacity to do it. So that really, really hit home for me. He lets me know if I'm triggering him. I have been a trigger a lot of times. And when that happens, he goes into defense mode. I'm sure a lot of your audience will be able to relate to this. And when I say defense mode, what I mean is sometimes you can back your child into a corner where they have to just come out and protect their feelings and, if they feel that they're being attacked. So Kelvin really, really taught me how to manage that. So he lets me know about those areas. I'm a student now, and he will speak up for himself. The only thing I encourage daily is for him to go out and be great. Preparation equals success. And at this point in his journey, production on the job daily. Just keep producing. Kelvin enjoys bridge. He's an avid bridge player. I love to see him go out on Sundays to the bridge clubs and get out some. We travel. We love to cruise each year, and we do activities around the city. But at this point in stage in his adulthood, he kind of leads it. He lets me know when he needs to recharge. He lets me know when it's time for me to let him go and be who he needs to be in his life. So I've taken a back seat at this stage, and watching him throughout his whole life is really, really, I want to encourage all the parents, whatever level they are with their kids, you can get to a point where I am. And so when you ask the question about what life has been, it's been a ride, and I'm here for the long haul whenever he needs me. But he's at a stage now where he'll let me know.
he'll tell you when to put the brakes on. He's like, wait, hold on, pop the brakes, Mom. Put the brakes on.
And I do.
I know. I could tell you do. I could tell you. You could easily. You could tell the dynamics between the two of you. It's wonderful there. Look how they're all buddied up and how close they're sitting, guys. Tighter than two peas in a pod. I had someone on the show a couple weeks ago, and her daughter is 4 years old and on the spectrum, and she's just starting out with her, and she's loving the whole ride. She's where you were, Loretta. She's at the beginning stages of everything. And what you're saying, I know she's listening to the show. What you're saying is encouraging to her, because she sees the long view for her child going to college, graduating, being like Dr. Kelvin. So Dr. Kelvin being on this show is so encouraging to her right now. Kimberly Pittman, I know you're watching. I know you're listening. Yes, yes, Kinsley can do it. As you can see, there's Dr. Kelvin right there. And Loretta can definitely help you out. So I'm going to hook you guys up so you can talk with her, let her know. Help her out. Say, girl, you can make it through this. You can make it through this. And I'm also giving your information to Dr. Hudson as well. I saw what you do on your website. Yeah, so we're talking about school. Now let's transition from high school. All right, we're out of high school, out of middle school. We're talking about college now. And we're talking about going to college, retention in college, those individuals, neurodiverse students on the spectrum, going to college and finishing the course. That's what we really want to talk about, because it matters that you finish the course. It doesn't matter how long the race is, you still have to finish the course. Doesn't matter how short the race is, you still have to finish the course. How can parents, and we have a parent here, how can parents, educators, and support around neurodiverse students assist with the transition from high school to post-secondary education? And I want to begin this one with Loretta and Dr. Kelvin. And the reason I want to begin there, because you guys just went through that. So how do parents, educators, and those who support neurodiverse students help make that transition from high school to post-secondary education, like college or university? That had to be weird for you guys.
Yeah. So from my point of view, for educators, I think that they should be trained in how to prepare autistic students for college by focusing on their strengths, not really their weaknesses, their strengths, and understanding of their needs. They also need to attend workshops and training by autism professionals so they can learn how to work with autism students and understand the accommodations and supports that they need. Now, for the parents, their role for their child is absolutely critical in transition support. Actually, when I was in high school, my mom actually prepared me, equipped me with tools needed to be successful in college. Some examples would be social skills, being able to function enough, communicate enough to get my needs met and to advocate for myself. Independent living skills. I had to learn how to cook. I had to learn how to clean, personal hygiene, be able to wake up myself in the morning, be able to drive myself, get to school on time, get to my classes on time, shopping, sweeping, what have you, whatever basic thing I had to do, I had to do it. The big thing I want to tell you is like the academic ability. Like in high school, I had a 4.2 GPA and I was in the top 10% of my class, but that's not enough. That's not enough to succeed in college. I needed, classroom readiness skills. I'd know, how do I read, more effectively? How do I take notes effectively? Good study habits. Resiliency. I mean, college life is going to knock you down. It knocked me down plenty of time. How do you get back up? And one of my biggest things is being able to self-regulate myself. Recharging again. Find that safe place. Find that safe haven. Find that bubble that we like to go to. Protecting your mental health. that's a really big thing in college when you're in the really expanse space, this vast space on campus, and you have no, and there's no structure to it at all. You have to actually find your own structure in there. Mm-hmm. Otherwise, you'll go crazy. You don't know how to protect that mental health. Like, you don't know where everything is and all that stuff. So preparation is the key to success, as my mom eloquently stated. Executive functioning skills is another key thing. Two of the most important things that I know about is time management, you know, being able to, you know, get assignments and jobs done on time, get, you know, be able to get to your classes on time. Don't miss exams and finals. It'd be nothing worse than missing a finals and, you know, getting an F for the course when you've done so well, all just because you were a few minutes late. I mean, nothing's worse than that. Now, I've never dealt with that, thankfully, but I've heard horror stories. I don't want that happening to the viewers who are, you know, where this is most relevant. And also organizational skills. Have a planner in place, you know, have, you know, some sort of structural routine in place, because that's where we thrive the most is, well, most of us is, you know, being able to know where everything is. Where you know where everything is, when it's happening, and knowing what to expect, it really helps us. You know, lessen our anxiety a bit. And the academic ability was secondary. In fact, that's one of the major messages I wanted to send to the viewers. Is, I mean, I hear, you know, parents, I'm like, oh my goodness, you know, my child is so smart and he's a valedictorian or a salutatorian in high school, and they're going to do all this stuff, and they get into high school and they drop out the first year because they didn't have these skills that my mom imparted to me. That's the message there that I wanted to send. And another thing is how the parents' role, their paradigm had to shift from being a micromanager. See, like, before, my mom was a micromanager of my life. She made all the decisions for me. She had to fight for me, my rights every time. She had to call everybody, you know, advocating for me and all that stuff. But for me to be successful in the college setting, I had to take, I had to be in the driver's seat. I had to have a input in my life for me even a chance for success in college. So to be a successful independent adult. So over time, she became a supporter and a partner for me. And it was difficult for her to let go, I admit that. But I just needed to learn these independent skills. I had to. And it was hard. And having to speak up for my own needs in college, because you're considered an adult.
That's right.
You're an adult now. You're not in high school. You're not in middle school, elementary. You're in college now. And mom couldn't call, you know, the professors on my behalf. They couldn't look at disability offices. They can't look at the bursar office. I mean, think about any place that you would think of: counseling, career center, professors, peers, housing, all of that. Now, the good news is I can always help prepare for those talks by calling my mom and help me prepare to know what to talk about. But ultimately, I have to be the one that goes in there and talk about what I need to have done and get business done. I have to get myself up. No call from mom. All I had back when I was in Auburn and Georgia Tech, all I had was an alarm clock. That's all I had. No, my mom wasn't going to do it. No friends were going to do it. Nobody, just me. It was my responsibility to be able to get to where I need to be on time, learn where everything is, learn the trolley, bus routes, however you navigate campus, because I didn't have a car in college on campus. So the important thing there is to start early, for parents to start early with your child, and over time, let go and give more responsibility to your child so that they will be more prepared. for college life.
Dr. Kelvin, let me say this real quick, Florida, before you add to that. You have no idea how many people you've just helped with that. Just with the part where you say start early with your child and gradually kind of as they grow, you grow with them. And Loretta, I know it wasn't hard. It wasn't easy. This is your baby. We see Dr. Kelvin, but this was your baby. So we understand when that's your baby involved, you know, how it is. And you had to make those transitions, you know, and it's and support comes in many ways. And Dr. Kelvin mentioned it, transitory support. You have your, if we're going to support people, no matter what it is, we have to be able to transition when they transition. We have to be ready mentally for that transition. The physical transition is what it is. They're going to either live at home while they're in college or not. But it's the more of a mental part that we got to deal with on that. Dr. Hudson, let's your question real quick, guys, because I want to dive into the meat of our discussion. Dr. Hudson, let's your question. We were talking about how important it is for that to happen. And don't worry, Loretta, I'm coming back to you because I want to hear your part as a parent on this as well. Because there's still some stuff you had to do too as a parent. He said, mom had to learn how to let go. Dr. Hudson, what does that kind of look like, that transitory support for neurodiverse students or those who are on the spectrum? What does that look like in terms of what a person needs to do and how they make that that preparation? Because Dr. Kelvin said something, well, when you're in high school, the parent is the advocate. But once you go to college, I learned that that individual must identify themselves as an individual.
At Parker, our purpose is simple. We want to make the world a better place. By working more efficiently, by using more sustainable practices, by developing better technologies, we keep moving forward. With each new idea, innovation, and partnership, we're one step closer to fulfilling our purpose every single day. To find out more, visit parker.com/purpose. Parker, engineering your success.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
On the spectrum, the parent can't do it. The parent's not there. In high school, it's a law. In Alabama, it's a law that the parent has to, you know, the school has to report it. But once you're in college, you're an adult. You have to report it. You have to be the one speaking up. So what does that support kind of look like, Dr. Hudson?
Right. I have to giggle because none of us talked to, like Dr. Kelvin and Loretta did, and I did not like share notes ahead of time. My notes, what I wanted to say is aligning so well with everything that they've talked about. And so one of the things that I want to reiterate is starting early and helping your child to be flexible and handle setbacks, be resilient, come back, problem solve, ask for help, all of those things. And that has to begin way before high school. When we think about the transition into college, a lot of us just think about 9th, 10th, 11th, and 12th grade. But particularly for someone with a disability, particularly if they have difficulty with communication, social skills, executive function, that all needs to be addressed way before high school and continuously. As a practical activity, I really am impressed when kids start to attend their own IEP meetings, whether that's middle school, middle school or high school, ideally middle school, because that's where they're going to begin to understand the complexity of how to put together an educational program that works for them. It can be overwhelming, and so there are steps to learn and supports to provide, but attending and leading those IEP meetings, I think is really critical, because that's where you're going to get your experience of advocating for yourself, talking about your strengths, what is it that you need, but doing that with a wide range of people who have very different perspectives, right? So your school principal in the meeting is going to have a different perspective on what's important for the IEP than the school counselor. And being able to have that as something you've already done, that's kind of in your muscle memory when you head off to college and you're doing all of that advocacy with disability services offices, career centers, when you're doing that for yourself, will give you a leg up. It won't feel quite as intimidating or scary, and it'll get you over the hump of, like, if it doesn't go well the first time, I'm willing to try it again. And again, those skills go back to way into early childhood, elementary school, of just trying again.
Absolutely. Absolutely. So it takes, in other words, what I'm hearing, man, on our show a couple of weeks ago, I told you I have a young lady whose daughter is 4 years old, is on the spectrum, and she's already beginning that process. So it takes, and Dr. Kelvin said this earlier, routine. You got to have established routines to and stick with it and continue to go with it. Okay, that being said, I just want to throw something out at you guys. I'm going to throw something out at you. Only 36%, let me put it this way. Yeah, only 36%, and I got this information, guys, not off the top of my head. Just to let you know, I got this from Autism Spectrum News. So a verifiable source. Only 36% of young adults on the autism spectrum attempt post-secondary education of any kind between high school and their early 20s. This does include two-year or four-year colleges, okay? So, or vocationals, vocational education, and only 38.8% of them will complete their degrees. If you do the math, only about 14% of autistic or those individuals on the spectrum, high school students, graduate college. 14%. I gotta ask you guys, do these numbers alarm anyone here? And why should they sound an alarm for everyone that's listening?
Dr. Hudson, I'd love to hear
your perspective. I absolutely would. Do these numbers, because they, what alarm should they be sounding to us? I definitely want to hear you, Dr. Hudson.
Yeah, it's when I hear that, it's almost unbelievable to me. And yet I can see how for most students who have not had the support, the experience, the practice, the repetition, the routines that, like, for example, Dr. Kelvin has had, I can see why you'd be likely to not finish out college. I kind of went and grabbed a couple just for comparison purposes. I like to kind of look at these numbers in context. And so the National Center for Education Statistics has all sorts of information as well. And their most recent data from the school year that ended in 2020, which we all know that was a little bit different, they only had 21% of undergraduate enrollment was students with disabilities.
Wow.
Overall, students without disabilities from high school to college was like 80%. So even in the context of this, these percentages, the beginning percentage is very, very small. So when we even say 36% attempt school, that's 36% of 21%.
Attempt. Yeah, of attempting. Yeah. Yeah, exactly.
Yeah, yeah. And it's, I think it really means that as a society, we're really selling ourselves short. We're missing out on people who have spectacular talents and such
Exactly.
Unique and interesting ways of looking at things and solving problems. If you get everybody thinking the same way, solving one problem, you're only going to come up with one solution, right? And that's...
Everybody has the same solution, exactly.
Yeah, yeah. So, I mean, I think it's really, as far as like thinking about the long-term ramifications, mm-hmm. you know, like we're missing the boat on a whole bunch of folks who could contribute really, really amazingly to their communities. But the system itself, the way it's set up, or, you know, whatever skills they're not fully being supported with, are big barriers.
That was my next question I was going to ask. Because when you hear things like that, Loretta, Dr. Kelvin, and Dr. Hudson, when you hear things like that, those numbers, and again, 36% of 21, when you hear things like that, no numbers of retention, the first thing comes to mind is why? Why? Why is the number so low? Why is the number like the way it is? And that's the first question. And you said the barriers can be, you know, lack of support. It could be systemic. The system isn't designed. And we know this. The world isn't designed for anyone that isn't built like them. If everybody wears blue, then everybody wears blue. But one person wears green, the world's like, what? Where does this green person come from? If the world wants everybody to and everything to be the same, it's not designed. And I think you hit the nail on the head, Dr. Hudson. The system isn't designed to handle students that are different, because when they do go to college, they do have to self-identify. Maybe it's many reasons why they don't self-identify. We talked about that in one of the other episodes, masking, you know, putting on masks, Dr. Kelvin hit it. Trying to fit in, be like everybody else. Well, if I tell everybody I'm different, they're gonna treat me different. They're gonna look at me different. I'm gonna act different, and I had to fit shoes that don't fit me. My grandson came over one day, and he's 2 years old. 2 years old. So he came on up one day, and I had just taken off my shoes, right? And so he put my shoe on his foot, trying to walk in my shoes. Oh, we thought it's all cute. But he kept falling. And the reason these challenges continue to exist is because we're trying to force people to wear shoes that weren't made for them.
And they keep tripping and falling.
And that's why it's happening. And so many other reasons that Dr. Hudson brought out. I got to get into this meat, man. This is some good stuff. Loretta, as a parent, you've been there for Dr. Kelvin for all his life. Again, we mm-hmm. see Dr. Kelvin, you see your child. So that's why it's so different. So you've been for Dr. Kelvin all his life. You had a chance to see him in every situation in life, both good and bad. Now, can you describe how crucial of a role that situational factors such as physical health, employment in the home, and family responsibilities or family dynamics play a key part or key role in motivating neurodiverse students to pursue education beyond high school?
Yes. You know, this put me in a different set, because one of the things that I've never brought out on your show is that when you talk about situational factors, you're looking at an African-American male here. Okay.
There you go.
So when we talk about numbers and research and things of that sort, we don't have enough research to look at the multiple issues that you face coming from a different culture.
Oh, wow.
So Kelvin started out the gate as an African-American male behind the eight ball.
He started out with a situation.
Yeah. And so on top of that, add autism. And that's not enough research. I was searching it. Maybe Dr. Hudson can steer me in a direction, but I couldn't find it. A lot of studies that are done by researchers, it doesn't include how race impacts the success. I did want to speak a little bit about studies that show that access to quality health care or the lack of that is a major factor. And it really is, because Kelvin wasn't officially diagnosed till he was 10. But I had him evaluated when he was 4. And so they would not. It was a 6-year gap. And what's interesting is, as a parent at that time, I wasn't as knowledgeable as I am today. So when I said, he was diagnosed at 10, it's not like I, at 10 years old, the light came on. I had already had him evaluated. They said that he didn't meet the criteria at the time. So guess what? Here comes a lot of labels of learning disability, conduct disorder, all of these things. And at that time, I wasn't as knowledgeable as I am today. But it took him being up to 10 years old. So think about that early intervention that he didn't get. But thank God he had, you know, parents and a village. You know, whatever I had to do, we were going to do. I was going to learn. I was going to go to every conference. So once I got plugged in and connected, that was better. Mm-hmm. But when we talk about situational factors, I'll mention a couple of others. In the Black community, a lot of times, I was raised, stuff stay in the house. It stays in the household. Yeah. And what I mean is, you don't go outside the household talking to Dr. Hudson. Whatever's happening in your home,
stay in the home. Don't tell nobody.
In the Black family, you keep it in the home. Well, those cultural biases, it's tough. Because I was told by my grandmother and a couple of other family members, Kelvin is the only child. He'll be okay. He just doesn't have any kids to play with. He'll grow out of it. A lot of parents feel, it's something different about my child. I'd like to get them evaluated, but then, people in the family are like, no, don't. If they do that, they're going to put a label on him and blah, 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 blah. So that's another thing in dealing with the Black community. I think I had a couple of other things. Studies show that for those who seek care, for those of us who do seek care, children, African-American children are 2.6 times more likely to be misdiagnosed. All right. So they don't come out late with the diagnosis that they need to get the early intervention. Like I said earlier, they're labeled with other diagnoses. So by the time this ADHD. Kid gets into kindergarten, first grade, by the time they're, become behavioral problems, then all of a sudden the system is like, oh, maybe we need to go back. But if they had done it at the beginning, that child could have got intervention services and you wouldn't be dealing with a child who had all of these issues. So it's a whole
host of stuff. You're helping somebody right now, Loretta. Because
I'm very passionate about that part.
Because there are so many parents that are dealing with that right now.
Well, the thing is,
there
we know that.
There are people that are facing that right now.
Yeah, but we know that, and I'll end on this. We know that all children are being diagnosed more. That's why it's such an increase in the number, 1 in 36 now or something like that?
Yeah.
But the issue that we have is that a lot of our kids, especially in the African-American community, they're being diagnosed, but they're being diagnosed late. They don't get it initially when they go in, whoever is testing them. Like I said, Kelvin's an example, 4 years old, and he didn't get his diagnosis till he was 10. So those are some situational factors.
Oh, and that 6-year gap, I guarantee you, in that 6-year gap, Loretta, you got notes from teachers saying he's misbehaving. You had stuff in that 6-year gap. That's a gap that you start saying, wait a minute, something's got to be going on. I know this kid is not just coming to class wrecking havoc. And you got suspensions, maybe teachers conference, maybe another teachers conference, detention. All these things play situational factors that are playing, and you're reading my brain on the situational factors. I was like, I wonder how much of this impacts individuals of different cultures. Like, cultural wise, where does this play a part you know, when they say, oh, you're of the African Americans, of you're this culture, you're this culture, so you're supposed, you're, they're just acting out. No! And, you know, every year, guys, and they do this with children, children get immunized. There are immunizations that children take, that children must have. You know, it'll be mumps, measles, whooping cough, you know, there are immunizations that infants must have. I wonder if it would be difficult autism diagnosis for every child as well. We think it's important enough to do immunizations for every child. We do immunizations. Every year, kids get immunized. Why is this, or is it something important that we can't just say, hey, you know what? A child has been born. Let's go ahead and do a test for autism. Let's go ahead and see if we need to screen them for this, to see if they're on the spectrum. So that way the parent and the support can begin earlier. Then that way they're well prepared, and that way they're well prepared for their student, well prepared for their child. I can't even imagine your child. A guest ahead of my show, Kimberly, she said her child is four now, but for 2 years she never said a word.
Mm-hmm.
Never said any. Can you imagine that? Can you imagine that? And what goes through your mind as a parent, you start thinking, what did you do? You did something wrong. You broke. Oh, you start doing, your mind goes crazy. What if you had an early on detection or early on test and, you know, screening, and the parent could be more at ease, ease anxiety in a lot of those cultural bias. Because now everybody's getting all these, you know, getting immunized for autism as well. See, on the spectrum. I think that'd help out a whole lot. Dr. Hudson, this is for you. I specifically chose this for you. I think you could have an input here. There are also institutional factors. There's some institutional factors. You spoke to it briefly earlier, such as policies, support programs, financial aid, a staff responsiveness that also impacts retention for students on the spectrum. Can you elaborate a little bit on how some of these factors can become barriers, and how can a parent work with the institution to help their students?
Yeah, the barriers are, you have to be so savvy and you need to be so persistent. Because the barriers can just, I mean, literally stop you, right? You just keep coming up and up against them over and over. Policies and support programs, you know, there are public universities all have, at least in the United States anyway, they'll have disability services departments. The extent to which those are, you know, helpful for students, you know, it varies. I think some places are maybe more receptive and more responsive. But again, it is, the onus is on the student to reach out to that organization. You know, as a parent, you can help your child to identify where the office is, when are they open, hey, you're going to go, here's what you should ask. But a lot of those, you know, again, that's already, what, one, two, three questions that if you decide any one of those is going to be the one that stops you, you're going to go through college with people not being aware that you perform and you are a much better student when you have accommodations and modifications that are legally, you are legally allowed to access.
Absolutely.
And, you know, I think I was nodding a lot when Loretta was talking about differences in race and access and diagnosis, mm-hmm. because it's huge. And just thinking about the access that some families have to being able to get an advocate to help them out, or to help them out with understanding the application process. Financial aid is huge, right?
Oh, big.
Yeah.
That's big.
And it's not very, I don't work in the post-secondary and secondary post-secondary environment very much. So I'm not really familiar with how much colleges and college like professors receive instruction on supporting students with disabilities and autistic people. I would suspect, though, if it's kind of like it is in a lot of our public schools in the U.S., that if you're really someone who wants to learn about it, you kind of have to learn about it on mm-hmm. your own. I think there's probably a base level of knowledge that perhaps people mm-hmm. receive. But, I mean, if you really want to understand, you know, what makes a neurodivergent brain neurodivergent and how is that different, you know, if you have ADHD versus
exactly.
if you have a learning disability. Exactly. So I think, you know, when you're in high school, I do feel like you have a little bit more for, if you've got a great IEP team in place and you have people that know and understand you because you've been there for 4 years,
right.
it creates right. a really great environment. And then you go to college and it's like, you start almost like you're starting over, really. And
oh, you are.
Yeah. Yeah. So, I mean, those are just a few of the barriers. And even as I'm saying them, I'm thinking, why would I? No wonder. No wonder I just decide not to do it. Right. We don't make it easy. We don't make it easy.
Why even try? If, you know, when you start thinking about, am I going to have financial aid? Am I going to have help? Am I going to have support? Dr. Kelvin, you graduated college. So I got to ask you this, man. I gotta ask you this question. There are also what I call individualized factors, and you point this out. When you go to college, your college may have a whole bunch of people, but you're the only person taking that class. You're responsible for your own homework. So there's what I call individualized factors that the individual, no one can change but that person. These individualized factors, they play a part impacting both the desire to pursue education beyond high school and retention for students on those on the spectrum. Now, these individual things like self-confidence, attitude, beliefs, what part did, and I know this is a good one, what part did any of these play in your decision to attend college? And how big of a role would you say they played in motivating you to complete your degree?
Absolutely. So I always had a passion and love for education and learning in general. I was motivated to succeed academically purely because that was really the one thing during my educational journey and career that I took pride in, that I was really good at. Like, I had the initiative and the motivation and the maturity to be able to do well in college. And it's not just, I know you said individualized factors, but those individualized factors were really imparted to me by my mom and actually allowed me to be able to assert myself mm-hmm. and be able to find that resilience and perseverance myself. And how it, you know, not only in, you know, academic settings, but also in life in general. Heck, during my, you know, studying Jeopardy, my perseverance skills came into play then. It took me 10 years to get on the show. But the thing is, the perseverance is the key thing that is not, that it goes everywhere. Once you develop that skill, it carries with you forever. And my biggest challenge actually was, you know, with communication and social interactions, but my love and passion for learning, teaching, education just kind of overwhelmed all of that. Like, I felt like I was, you know, in command. I felt like I was, you know, just being able to give back to those students to get the light bulb on. That passion of mine, that fire to bring, you know, to do something good for them is the one thing that keeps me going, even though I know I'm interacting with people a whole lot and I recognize that. But just knowing my beliefs and values of education mm-hmm. overwhelmed all that. So, yeah, so during my time just TAing and teaching and all that stuff, it's just that was one of the most enjoyable parts of my PhD program was the TAing, because I like, you know, teaching and all that stuff. But even with all that planning in the world, I still had challenges ahead, mainly social based. But I put myself in that position to win, and the resiliency and self-regulation, self-advocacy, you know, helped along the way. As a parent, you really got to be able to, you know what your child's gifts are. They'll tell you. I mean, it's going to be, you just have to pay attention to it. They'll tell you and nurture them and just have, you know, you nurture them wherever they may take you. They can take you to so many good things. It's unbelievable. Like you see like your child like messing with an airplane a whole bunch. Who knows? Uh-huh. Nurture that in aerospace. They may be in NASA someday.
Exactly.
Or, you know, mess with trains. They can be like a conductor, like being a train conductor or some, you know, engineering building trains. You never know. Athletics, like you mentioned, Travis, in the beginning, athletics, the arts, you know, math and science. That was
exactly.
Me. You know, my mom saw me with my love for math and science, and I just, you know, and look where that took us, because my mom, you know, nurtured my gifts for those subjects, and that's where we are now with my, you know, and happy as can be. So just, you know, just encourage, you know, your child to be able to find their own individualized factors, but your parent really has to be not just a manager, but a supporter and partner for you. So, yeah.
What I'm hearing, Dr. Kelvin, from you, what I'm hearing you talk and speak about this, what I'm hearing is as parents, find what your student enjoys doing. Find what your child enjoys doing. And those individual factors like self-confidence, you know, believing in themselves and all those things will begin to come natural to your student, to your child. Don't focus on the negatives. What can they do? Every child, every person has something good and positive that they can do. So what I'm hearing from you, Dr. Kelvin, is, Travis, it wasn't easy, but I focused on the things that I enjoy doing, things that I enjoy doing. And she nurtured and she grew those things. So that helped me to build in my self-confidence. So when things were challenging, when they did overwhelm me, when I did need to recharge, I could always look back and draw my strength from those things that I like, from my passions. I kept hearing the word passion in teaching, passion in teaching. So that tells me that you have a true passion for that. That's like that truly is like your energy, your power comes from all of our power comes from our passion and comes from teaching and sharing knowledge. That is your go-to bag. That is your bag that you go to and that you can reach in and pull out and you'll draw strength from. So Loretta, whenever he's feeling maybe challenged, he'll go into that bag. He'll go into teacher mode. He'll go into educator mode. So if he goes into teacher mode, don't fight him. That means he needs to go into that bag at that time. That means something's happened that he needs to go in that bag at that moment and pull out and put on the hat and go and become teacher Dr. Kelvin, because that's who he is. That's what he needs. So these numbers can be turned around, though, guys. We can turn these numbers around doing things differently. But Dr. Kelvin, you and your mom, you guys share a unique bond. You guys also provide tutoring services. Ask you guys a quick question. What ages can parents reach out to you about? And you also spend time educating others and speaking to crowds on neurodiversity while motivating listeners. So where can you be reached, and what age can parents reach to you, reach out to you about?
All right. I can take that. So our program is actually a three-part package consisting of academic coaching, transition support, and parent support consultation. So we reach out to high school and first year college students. I can actually personally relate to those students on the spectrum, mainly because I've lived it. That's the big advantage there. And my teaching style resonates with those students because they think logically. We think logically. We don't like to just take everything for face value without knowing where it comes from. So I break down that material. I analyze that material in a step-by-step process, and because that's how I learned effectively. And I stick by this mantra that I basically, you know, developed during my time, making the complex simple. Make the complex simple. And, but yeah, the three part is, you know, first part is academic coaching. That is where I, you know, where it includes subject matter support and increasing the development of study skills and logical thinking. Be able to justify your thinking, prevent second guessing, know that you can back up, you know, your answers with evidence and facts, something that we enjoy. We mm-hmm. want to be able to back that up and be confident and stand, have the self-confidence to stand by that, knowing that we have it. And they able to grasp material easier. Be able to set goals and weekly objectives, note-taking techniques, reading strategies, and you know, that's just a snippet. I can do much more than that. Transition support. That focuses more on the executive functioning skills, including increasing student ability to effectively communicate and self-advocate for themselves. Be able to consistently create a plan and follow through with it. See, it's not enough to just make the plan. You got to actually do it. Increased understanding of very tough concepts. And time management, organization, prioritization. I focused on those skills during that time. And then finally, where my mom comes in with the parent support consultation. So in that, she offers to parents to discuss roles and transition. She shares how she navigated that transition process with me. And those that are interested in learning more about what my mom and I do is y'all can visit our website at www.klspeaks.com or email us at contact@klspeaks.com or you can phone us at 205-595-8261. We're here to empower those families under the autism spectrum and help them win. That is our mission. And my mom and I are passionate about that, with helping you not only academically, but also, you know, mentally and emotionally. Hopefully we can touch your families in a positive way through our services. So, yeah.
Cool. I love it. Making the complex simple. Dr. Hudson, you do a lot with students as well. You do a lot with everyone as well. You work with students on the spectrum, providing them with necessary tools to help improve their social, language, and life skills. Where can you be reached?
So I have a website. It's www.advancedbehaviorchange.com. Or you can email me, just Diane, D-I-A-N-E, at advancedbehaviorchange.com. I work individually with kids as well as do parent coaching. I'm going to be adding some group parent coaching here coming up because that the community piece, I've been getting some feedback, is really critical just so you don't feel like you're the only parent out there hanging out, you know, doing it on your own. And then social groups as well. And so there's a lot to the business, but it's really, really fun really, really rewarding. And it's just what I love to do.
Love it. I love it, guys. I absolutely love it. Guys, this has been an absolutely amazing, amazing episode, an amazing show. I'm not going to hold everybody. Thank you, everybody, for tuning in. Guys, I want to thank, I guess, Dr. Hudson, Dr. Diane Hudson, Dr. Kelvin Smith. Next year we'll be doing this again. Dr. Hudson, we had to wait on her. She's out of the country, y'all. Yeah, she's out hanging 10.
I love it.
Guys, given all the information we talked about tonight, the situational factors, Dr. Loretta, you bought it with that one, Loretta. The situational factors, the institutional factors, the individualized factors, they can become that barrier to help prevent or get in the way of individuals finishing the course. Dr. Kelvin is exceptional. I'm not ringing a bell. I'm just making a statement, a true statement. Dr. Kelvin is exceptional, but on many aspects, he can also be considered the exception.
Yes.
Given the information that we provided tonight, at times finishing the course can resemble a lot like standing still. Sometimes nothing appears to change. We can all make a difference when we can play our part in helping others finish their course by providing healthy situations and support, advocating with our local government agencies to enact policies that provide clear and, identifiable support programs, and by providing mentorship for at-risk students on the spectrum, encouraging them to believe in themselves and their abilities. Maybe, just maybe by doing so, we will have a chance to help someone finish the course. I got to do this, guys. If I don't do this, somebody's going to say something to me. So I got to end this the proper way. So let me go ahead and do this real quick. Guys, I'm so glad everyone was here. Glad that everyone joined in today. So let me go ahead and do this so I don't get an email or a message, because I will. I promise you, I will. Let me do this real quick. Not there. All right, here you go. I'm going to put this like this so they won't say nothing to me. Yeah, there we go. Now I'm going to do it. There we go. Now. All right, guys. It's about that time. And as always, it's been a real blast. Listen, don't forget to visit our YouTube page. That's Tell Me Something Good with a capital T. And as always, guys, you can listen to your favorite episode every Thursday, 6:30 p.m. Central, 7:30 p.m. Eastern, to listen to the show. Or you can stream it on your favorite listening platform like Apple Podcasts, Spotify, iHeartRadio, and so many more. Thank you, everybody, for tuning in. And as always, in parting, if you're going to tell me something, then tell me something good. I'm out of here. I got to go. Peace, y'all.
This is the story of the one. As a maintenance engineer, he hears things differently. To the untrained ear, everything on his shop floor might sound fine, but he can hear gears grinding or a belt slipping. So he steps in to fix the problem at hand before it gets out of hand. And he knows Granger's got the right product he needs to get the job done, which is music to his ears. Call, click Granger.com, or just stop by. Granger, for the ones who get it done.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.